The Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform to order. We do have a quorum, and first item on the agenda is approval for the minutes, and I believe Chairman Dean has a motion for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the approval of the minutes with one slight change, and that would be one of the testifiers or during the overview. Anika Bowie is not the founder of Restore the Vote. She's actually lead coordinator of the Restore the Vote Coalition. If the minutes reflect that, I would move these minutes.
Very well. Representative Dean moves approval of the February 7th minutes with the correction that he just stated on the record, making sure we have the correct title of the testifier. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, we have three bills before us, and what I'd like to do is pull up House File 71st. That's Representative Kunesh Padin's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force creation. We heard good testimony, strong testimony about this a week or two ago. As we're moving through the new configuration in terms of moving bills through in this session, it was noted that we didn't have the correct motion, and so I want to make sure we have the correct motion. And then also, since it involves a fiscal note, we were strongly advised not to forward bills that had fiscal notes without an appropriation reference to them. I think that's a wise thing to do. So with that, members, I would move that we reconsider the vote by which House File 70 was referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and then that will allow us to bring it up and make the correct motions. Questions? If not, then all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. House File 70 is now before the committee. There is an amendment in your packet. It's amendment A1. I would move that we amend House File 70 with A1. It's pretty simple. It seeks to add an appropriation of, is this correct, 64?
Double check, I believe so, yes.
Hold on a second. All right, so it seeks to add an appropriation of $64,000. Are there questions? If not, then all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. House File 70 is before us as amended. Members, my intent is that, the chair's intent is that we forward this bill with your vote, your permission to Ways and Means. It's going to need to make a stop under our rules in the GovOps committee. My hope is that we pull it back here to have a further conversation given the fiscal note that accompanies it. And so with that, the chair moves that House File 70 as amended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And just you had mentioned the $64,000 in 2020 and not mentioned the $36,000 in 2021. So just to be clear on the record, that includes both of those within the amendment that we've amended to include both those years, not just the 1 year in 2020.
Oh, I see. So it's $100,000 total then. Thank you for that, Chairman Dean. Further discussion? With that, then, all in favor of the motion to refer House File 70 to Ways and Means as amended, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Members, with that, I'm going to ask Representative Long to come forward to present House File 689. I'm sorry, do I have the wrong? Right, aren't we doing Long first? Oh, okay. You know, Representative Long, we have another technical correction, so let's get that out of the way. Actually, your bill is the one bill we'll spend intensive time on today. Representative Mueller, House File 418, and again, this has to do with making sure we get our motions correct to Ways and Means. Is that correct, Representative Mulder?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I would move that this House File 418 be sent to Ways and Means. Is that right?
Representative Mulder, I believe your motion is to reconsider the vote by which House File 418 was referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay.
If you would so move.
So moved.
Wonderful. Thank you. That will then bring it back for us to have the correct motion. Right. So, discussion? All in favor of the motion to reconsider the vote by which House File 418 was referred to the Ways and Means Committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Mulder, your bill is back before us to make the correct motion. And Representative Mulder then moves to recommend that House File 418 be re-referred to Government Operations.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Mulder. Representative Long. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I think last motion caught me by surprise. I was trying to think, I'm just wondering, since we're a division of Ways and Means, can we actually make a motion other than just send it back to Ways and Means to have, and they would have to make the Ways and Means would have to make a motion to GovOps?
Representative Johnson, I've been advised that the way we've done the motion is correct. And hold on a second. Got it. Correct. Lee Johnson, the rule of thumb, and I'm adjusting to it as well because this is new for me, is for us to send the bills back out the way in which it came in. This bill then will need to, it didn't come to us through Ways and Means. To get it to Government Operations, this is the correct motion. So this is going to travel to the floor. As a committee report, and then the action to move it to government options, government operations would happen at that point. Thank you for the clarification, Lee Johnson. With that, Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, would you prefer to take up the amendment first or hear my testimony first?
Yeah, why don't we have your first motion? Which is to bring the bill before the committee for possible to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus public safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move that we bring up HF 689 before the committee for laying over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Very well. Your bill is before us, Representative Long, and then you have an amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. The amendment is a technical fix that was identified by our very capable nonpartisan staff to clarify that the probation maximum term for the gross misdemeanor offense for fourth-degree criminal sexual conduct is not limited to 1 year, but instead to 5 years, which was the author's intent.
And Representative Long, it's my understanding this puts the bill in the shape that you wish it to be before this committee for
that is correct, Mr. Chair.
Consideration. Very well. Are there any questions? If not, then all in favor of the long motion to amend House File 689 with the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Long, your bill, House File 689, is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As amended.
Mr. Chair and colleagues, we've heard testimony before this committee, and we'll hear more this week about our probation system and how it's failing basic tests of fairness. While Minnesota rightly prides itself on being on the low end nationally for time spent in prison, we are an outlier when it comes to probation. While we are the 47th state when it comes to incarceration, Minnesota is the fifth highest state in the country for probation length. And if you look at total time under supervision, this brings our rank as a state up to 13th. While it is largely a good thing that Minnesota focuses on probation over incarceration, this is a concern. Community supervision has many benefits, and if done well, can be much more tailored to help individuals succeed and reintegrate. Those on supervision can spend time with their family, pursue careers and education, but probation is still punishment. And when we rank 13th in terms of total time under supervision, That's a strong indication that our punishment overall is excessive. In fact, the balance has tilted so far toward probation that the average probation term in Minnesota is nearly 2 years longer than the average prison term. Now, some may hear that statistic and think we may want our probation terms longer than our prison terms, but that's not how it often feels to individuals experiencing these conditions. I've spoken to many individuals who said they wish they'd been able to take more prison time instead of serving extended probation terms, and sometimes the trade-off of lengthy probation for limited time under supervision is not one they want, limited time in incarceration. Probation in Minnesota is also not a light touch, and it has real impacts. Probation can make it harder to keep a job with routine check-in requirements that can impact employment. Treatment conditions for probation can require transportation and flexibility in scheduling. Courts can also require probation terms that are not tailored to the individual offender, for example, alcohol restrictions, even if that's not related to the underlying offense. So individuals can get in trouble for something that had nothing to do with the original crime, such as a urine sample, even if there was no chemical dependency issue. Probation also restricts civil rights like voting. Another concern with our current probation system is that it is applied unequally across the state. This means we are failing the basic fairness principle that those accused of the same crime should receive similar punishment. And for this reason alone, we need to standardize our probation system. In some parts of Minnesota, the average probation length is 3 years, while in others it is 7 years. There are still probation terms being handed out for 20, 30, and even 40 years, the statutory maximum short of life in prison. Let's look at drug offenses as one example. In the 6th Judicial District, which includes Duluth, the average probation term for drug offenses is just over 3 years. But in the 3rd Judicial District, which includes Rochester, the average probation term for drug offenses is 9 years. This means simply based on where you commit a drug crime, you could receive a sentence that is three times harsher. This pattern plays out across different crime categories. HF 689, the bill we're hearing today, is straightforward. It sets a 5-year cap on probation length for all felony offenses except murder and criminal sexual conduct. 5-year probation caps are common in other states. This includes peer states in the Midwest like Iowa and Missouri. It also includes states that aren't typically viewed as soft on crime like Alabama and Mississippi. Most felony probation sentences by far are already under 5 years in Minnesota. If you include non-probation sentences, then on the low end, 78% of all sentences in the 7th Judicial District were 5 years or under. And on the high end, 98% of sentences in the 4th Judicial District were 5 years or under. Overall, this averages out to 13% of felony cases statewide that were sentenced to a probation term longer than 5 years. Research also shows that probation revocations are far more likely to happen in the first 3 years. According to Sentencing Guidelines Commission data, from 2002 to 2012, 1% or less of offenders had their sentence revoked after 5 years. If you look at the revocations by year for that period, an average of 6% were revoked in year one, 5% were revoked in year two, and 3% in year three. For year four, the averages were about 1.5%, and year five, about 1%. So you can see the trend. And if you, as I mentioned, if you're going out beyond 5 years, it's less than 1% for that entire period. This demonstrates that not only are long probation terms unevenly applied, they are also unnecessary. Long probation is not rehabilitative. Probation officers will have all the information they need to determine whether an individual is fit to remain in society after 5 years. So what's happening in year 15 or year 20 or year 40 of a probation term? Not much, except taking up space in probation officer caseload that could be better targeted towards those who are at greater risk, and waiting to see if they make a mistake that sends them back to prison, even if they have met all probation terms for decades. This bill has bipartisan support. We have 4 Republican co-authors, supported by a broad range of stakeholders, including many you will hear from today, supported by faith organizations, including Isaiah and Prison Ministry. I do want to note that I'm asking that this bill be laid over and not come up for a vote today because there are ongoing negotiations and discussions with stakeholders, and it is my hope that the bill, that these discussions will continue and that we will be able to reach an agreement, I'm hopeful, before this bill comes back before the committee. So with that, I will be happy to take questions, or I'd be happy to proceed to the presenters I've brought with me.
Representative Long, why don't we move to the testifiers, and then we'll take questions at the end of the list of testifiers.
Thank you. I will invite up Bill Ward and Ryan Ells as my first two presenters. Bill Ward is our state public defender and will be our first presenter.
Public Defender Ward, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, as stated, my name is William Ward. I'm a state public defender from Minnesota. And I know looking around the room and hearing the press earlier, there might be some trepidation in not maybe just this body, but in the House regarding supporting a bill that seeks to cut pronounced probation sentences. And there shouldn't be trepidation, though. This bill is not about being soft on crime. It's about making sense on sentencing. It is statutorily smart sentencing. As Representative Long just told you, that in our current scheme, the pronounced probation sentences are way too long in many of our counties. This bill addresses public safety and limited resource issues in the way they should be focused. By limiting the time on probation, the resources in Department of Corrections and Community Corrections can deal with the underlying issues of the probationer, addressing recidivism, and focusing on the most important individuals, the high-risk and high-need offenders, using evidence-based research and practice. As all of you know, this is not the first time we've dealt with probation terms in this body. Our legislature in 2016 directed the Department of Corrections to establish a working group and make recommendations regarding a concept called earned compliance credit. I was a part of that work group, as were many people in this room. Mr. Godfrey from Department of Corrections, I got to sit next to Judge Small on a monthly basis, and we came to a consensus on many issues regarding what currently exists in Minnesota. Over a course of 6 months, that committee was asked to present a report to the legislature, and I want to talk about what we addressed and what consensus that we had. One of the key areas of concern were the existing disparities in pronounced probation sentences throughout the state of Minnesota. As part of its report, the Commissioner of Corrections offered the following recommendations: that earned compliance programs were not appropriate for Minnesota on probation or parole. The idea of earned compliance would be that the person who's on probation would eat away at the top end of that probation period. But understanding our culture here, we recognize as a group, a disparate group at that, that earned compliance could not work. We recognized and came to a consensus that the probation sentence length caps should be standardized using the legislative process, that probation sentencing guidelines should be studied and recommendations provided to the legislature, and the committee also felt that resources needed to be allocated to address geographical disparities in programming options throughout the state. In my limited time, I want to talk about two things, one of which is the existing discharge policy or early discharge policies, and also to reiterate what Representative Long said about the pronounced probation sentences. I know many of you understand that there is the ability for the person who is on probation to petition the court to get off probation early. Let me tell you, it doesn't work. It is incredibly disparate throughout the counties in this state. We have 87 different cultures and 87 different ways that early discharge can work. Please understand, Minnesota does not have a statutory or rule governing early probation or early discharge from probation. The probation is under the express authority of the court, and all early discharges must have court approval. I recognize and heard over and over again the Department of Corrections and the Community Corrections Act counties have established policies. But as the committee wrote, and these are their words, these policies are typically informed by the local judiciary and prosecutors as to what the requirements are and if there are any specific exclusion from early discharge. To me, that's a nice way of saying that existing culture in a county basically governs early discharge. And as with early discharge policies, there's also, as Representative Long stated, significant differences to pronounce sentences across jurisdictions. I wasn't going to pick an actual say about which districts they are, but clearly the 4th District has been talked about, and the average pronounced term there is 38 months. Average in the 7th is 87 months. It's a four-year difference. It's a 49-month difference, depending on where the case was charged or lodged and also where the probation was imposed. The overall length disparities are not only on the lengths themselves, but also on the case types. So after this disparate group met over the course of 6 months in reviewing the available data and discussions, they acknowledged that the major issue for probationers in Minnesota appears to be the disparity in pronounced sentence lengths. The consensus was that the lengths are often longer than what's necessary to address the risks and needs of the offender. And when probationers have completed their rehabilitative programming and other conditions of probation, oftentimes they're moved to lower levels of supervision. At this point, the lengthy probation, it only results in disenfranchisement of citizens through collateral consequences, including voting, and preventing civic engagement and unnecessary barriers to employment and housing, which obviously could negatively impact successful completion of probation. Quickly, just a summary from the committee. This is them, these are their words, not mine. Statutory probation sentence lengths lead to pronounced sentences that are unnecessarily long to accomplish public safety goals. Sentences resulting from high statutory maximum drive disparities in probation length. And as Representative Long said, we could have probation ranges from 4 years to 40 years in Minnesota, 40 years. Regional disparities create barriers for compliance with conditions and case plans, and current early discharge policies are not sufficient to address disparity issues. Finally, early discharge policies themselves vary greatly across the state. Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a smart bill. It deals with the data, the realities, and the findings of those truly who are knowledgeable about the issue. It follows the idea of evidence-based best practices. It provides for much needed and appropriate consistency across the state. It creates fundamental fairness to all who are sentenced, no matter the county where it's charged or where the sentence is pronounced. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Before I turn it over to Ryan, I noticed that this is my first bill before the committee, and my cookies haven't made it around yet. So I'm hoping that those will circulate so that you all will have an even more favorable opinion of this bill.
Representative Long, you're very kind.
Next, I have Ryan Else with the Minnesota Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers.
Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing MACDL to present today. Rather than echo everything that Bill just said, I would support everything he said. And I will keep my remarks short, as it seems you have a lot of people to present to you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Else.
Thank you, Chair. Justice shouldn't depend on what side of the county line your case originates in. I've had clients that commit the same offense in Hennepin County and get a 3-year term of probation, get a 20-year term of probation a little bit further out state. And it's just fundamentally unfair. It's also just not smart. We're learning through the specialty court movement that the most effective probation is short, intensive probation that expects a lot out of the probationer. Having, as the statistics have shown, having somebody on probation for 20 years does nothing but cost us money and have an eventual probation violation for something that is inconsequential. If you have a felony offense and somebody ends up on a probation violation 15 years later for DWI, that's not good use of the public's resources. And finally, I see a lot of private clients that have very large effects on their employment and what they can do in their life if they're on probation. Right now, I've got a client that I'm really close to named Tony Miller, who has gone through social work school, has gotten straight A's, and as he's getting out of social work school, he's told that he has to wait to be licensed until he's off probation. It just doesn't make any sense. And so I would support the bill, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Representative Long, because we do have a good number of testifiers, the chair would like to maximize the fact that these two testifiers are in front of us right now and see if there are questions for them. But certainly, members, if there are questions that come up later, I trust you two gentlemen will stick around for that. But right now, there is a question from Representative Mullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I applaud these efforts. I think this is really an important disparity that we need to look at. And my questions are more related to sort of some technical aspects, perhaps. So sometimes when there's a probation violation that occurs, it doesn't automatically result in revocation of probation, and the court might restructure terms of probation. And so I just want to understand whether or not that 5 years, if the court restructures probation, we're still going to be, excuse me, we're still going to be limited to that five-year cap. Is that correct?
Representative Long and gentlemen, you're free to weigh in as well.
That's a very good question, Representative Mueller. I'm not sure how the bill reads right now. I don't know if our nonpartisan staff would have an answer on that. Otherwise, I'd be happy to work with you to find out the answer. I think it's a fair question.
Mr. Johnson, I think they've referred to you.
Mr. Chair and members, of course, all these things are subject to court interpretation, but as I read this bill, we're replacing one maximum period, which is currently the statutory maximum, with a new maximum period, which is 5 years. I think the most likely interpretation is that the maximum would be 5 years. I will note that there are a few other statutory provisions that allow the extension of probation. Those are not affected by this bill. For example, if a person fails to pay restitution, probation can be extended by 1 year, and that can happen twice. So possibly 5 years could turn into seven. There are also provisions for extending probation by, I believe it's one full year, for failing to complete court-ordered treatment. So in that case, 5 years, I believe, could turn into 6 years. There's nothing that would change that. But if it was simply a violation and it was a restructuring of the terms of probation, as I read the bill, I don't believe a court would conclude that restructuring could also extend that five-year period based solely on that violation.
Representative Mueller.
Thanks. And then also just want to clarify, so in a case where there is a presumptive prison commit and the court does a downward dispositional departure to probation, those downward dispositional cases are also subject to this five-year max. Is that correct?
Senator Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. And then I have one. Thank you. And then one more, and I think, Representative Long, you and I talked about this, but there was a victims group that was a little concerned about the early release and whether or not it could be put into the bill that at least victims would be receiving notice if there was an early discharge from probation. And I wondered if you had a chance to consider that as a possibility.
Senator Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, no, I haven't had a chance to meet with him yet. I would be happy to do so and happy to have that conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's all.
And Representative Mueller, we do have some testifiers that will be coming up from county attorney perspective as well as some of the advocates. And so perhaps that might also offer an opportunity to engage with them on their perspectives around your questions.
Thank you.
Very well. Representative Long.
All right. I'll call up my next group of testifiers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Hold on a second. We have a question for Representative Johnson.
Apologize.
Chair, it was brought up that they're talking about the average length of probation is different between the 4th and the 7th Judicial District. I'm just wondering if that dealt with all the crimes combined or each specific type of crime. Because Minnesota is vast. It's not the largest state, but it is a large state. And it's different. Each community is different. Each community thinks one crime or another crime might be more. Look at them different. So I was just wondering if they were looking at if we're comparing apples and oranges or apples and apples.
Mr. Chair, I may defer the question to one of our next testifiers. Director Mitchell is going to be coming up in the next group and has, I think, presented a lot of the data that I was referring to.
Right. So, Representative Johnson, we'll make sure we tee that question up first with that group of testifiers. Anything else? If not, thank you, gentlemen. And please stick around so we can continue the conversation with you in case other questions arise. Representative Long.
I'll bring up my next three testifiers. So from Department of Corrections, our Field Services Director, Al Godfrey, Director Kelly Mitchell from the University of Minnesota Urbina Institute, and at Ramsey County Attorney John Choi.
We do have extra chairs here, so perhaps all three can come forward at the same time.
Good afternoon. My name is Al Godfrey. I'm the Field Services Director for the Minnesota Department of Corrections that provides the administrative oversight for probation for the Department of Corrections, supervised release, as well as intensive supervised release.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Godfrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the Minnesota Department of Corrections, generally we are supportive of probation caps. And based upon the various reasons that you've also heard some of the testimony already, and I'll further expand at this point in time. When you look at the role of the work we do, it's really based upon three things. It's really based upon trying to, we provide supervision, we also assist victims, but we also look at working with the offender around positive change. And I think that's really, really a public safety in the best interest of Minnesota to do so. When you look at our work, for the first 3 years, it's often the most intensive work, working with a person around change. It's also our biggest indicator of success, often at the three-year mark, based upon their adjustment, but also new offenses, we're able to gauge success. And if you look across the country, often that is the mark that people look at, is the 3 years as a success under supervision. At that point in time, if we're continuing to provide supervision, we are taking away valuable resources right now to work with the persons that are under supervision that need it the most, those high-risk offenders. Right now, when you look at our caseloads for the Minnesota Department of Corrections, it's typically one agent to 61 offenders or persons under supervision. That's for the highest-risk offenders. And so for us, when we think about probation caps, and we're able to start to shift resources to those persons that need it most, both for supervision as well as support around change. There was a mention, some work that was done in 2017 on earned compliance. And based upon that work, we were able to look at the sentencing, and we did see that there was geographically disparities as the sentences around the state. Specifically, probably one of the areas that had the greatest disparities was drug offenses, and that's been mentioned today. That has been looking at some districts or judicial districts, the average is 37 months. Compared to other judicial districts, that's 119 months. That is an 82-month difference. The work that we're trying to do right now, I think there is evidence-based practices. There's work, there's principles, there's research out there that really is helping us guide us as to how effectively working with a person's around change. But often what is the barrier is not that we don't know what to do, been feeling like we have the resources to do that work well. So I think this when we look at probation caps, it really helps propel us forward and feeling like we're able to do that work well. But lastly is when you think about the person that's under supervision, and you talked about it, there's barriers that come with that person's life when they're continued to be under supervision. Some things we talked about for civil rights and voting. But also I want to bring this to the committee's attention. There's also federal rules that really regulate how persons that are under supervision are actually able to move across state lines. And that's called interstate. And those are federal rules. And so if they're under supervision for 40 years, ultimately there's a lot of regulation as to that person's ability to move within the system or across the state or across the country. So I think it really does get down to is the fundamental about the work we do is once person has a good adjustment, is moving on, allow them the opportunity to do so. And then lastly, it's come up that when we think about technical violations, the last thing we want to do is feel like we're sending persons back to prison or to prison who definitely don't need it. And with caps, hopefully then we're not finding ourselves, even with technical violations, is expanding upon that issue. So thank you very much. If you have any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Godfrey.
Director Mitchell.
Mr. Chair and Public Safety Committee, thank you very much for allowing me to be here today. From 2011 to 2014, I served as the executive director.
Ms. Mitchell, I just want to make sure for the record on the tape.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We have your name.
I'm Kelly Mitchell, and I am the executive director of the Robina Institute at the University of Minnesota Law School.
Thank you.
Apologize. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So what I wanted to say is that from 2011 to 2014, I was the executive director of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. And it was actually, when I served in that role, I had heard that some probation terms could be long, but I really honestly didn't know what they looked like. And so I asked the staff to run the numbers, and that was actually the first time that we saw them in Minnesota. And they've been run repeatedly since then, and they have supported the work of groups like the Earned Compliance Committee. So it feels great to hear this topic being discussed on a larger platform today. I think that this is a good move forward. At the Robina Institute, we've done some research to figure out what the effect of longer probation terms is. We've done literature reviews of other, of research that others have done in social sciences to figure out what the effect of long probation terms are. And our review found that longer probation terms are associated with increased negative probation outcomes. So that means more technical violations, more rearrests, and more recidivism. The thing that's interesting is that all the research that we reviewed that's out there talks about long probation terms, but they're always five-year terms. So even in other states, probation is viewed very differently than it is viewed here. The other thing that we also looked at sort of what if you were to think about setting a probation term, what would you use to set the mark if you were starting from scratch? And so one of the ideas was recidivism. So we also did a literature review to see what the average time to recidivism is for individuals on probation across the country. And it's actually 12 to 18 months, which is very consistent with the data that we've seen from the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission on revocation, which is a little bit of a different figure, but 12 to 18 months. So really the question is, if we're setting terms that are a lot longer than 12 to 18 months, what's the goal there? I think that that's the question that we have to ask ourselves. The other thing that I want to bring up is that longer probation terms are actually the policy that we have in place right now that sets these long probation terms cascades into other policies. So if we go back to look at how the sentencing guidelines are structured, until recently, because we have these, disparate probation terms, because we have varying use of early discharge, the commission didn't quite know what to make of probation. And when they were trying to figure out criminal history and whether or not to impose an extra point if you were on probation when you committed the crime, the policy that they had in place was that they would consider that point for the full duration of the probation term, even if you had been early discharged. That was the only way that they could figure to sort of even out the disparities that were going on around the state. They've just recently reversed that policy, and that's also before you for consideration this year. But they grappled with these numbers again, and they grappled with the variation and the disparity again. So it's I guess the point I'm just trying to make is that it's larger than just how long do we have somebody serve. It sort of infiltrates a lot of different criminal justice policies that we have here in Minnesota and the way that we work with offenders. And with that, if I could answer the question for Representative Johnson, I just want to get to that. So the numbers that have been quoted so far are primarily, all the offenses put together. So that's the average. If you take all the offense types and you average them out, you'll get that sort of 39-month figure in the 4th District and something closer to 80 up in the 7th District. The Sentencing Guidelines Commission actually just published last Friday, I believe, their updated probation revocations report, and they have in the appendix, they've broken out by offense grouping what the average probation terms are. So when we do that, we see that the same sort of patterns continue, with the 4th and the 6th continuing to have lower numbers by far than the other districts. So for person offenses, 40 years is their average. as compared to the 7th District, which has 67 years. If we look at the offense that has the highest average probation terms, that's DWI. And what's really going on for DWI is almost everybody in the state is using the maximum terms that are in statute, which is somewhere in the 80-month range, and then the 4th and the 6th District, again, are down at 60 months. So they are, for some offenses, they do have higher averages, but so does everybody else. So the pattern there, if you think about that dip and the way it dips down a lot for the 4th and 6th, is consistent across types, but the total numbers might go up and down by offense grouping, if that makes sense. I only brought one copy of this, but I'm happy to send it around if you want to see that too.
Ms. Mitchell, we might even be able to have it copied. We'll see. Very quickly, I'm glad that you addressed yourself to Representative Johnson's question. I'd like Mr. Godfrey to weigh in as well, and perhaps eventually County Attorney Choi. Mr. Godfrey, I was struck by, if I heard it right, the incredible variation or difference in regards to drug offenses across the state. And I don't remember exactly the metric you shared, but what caught my ear was the 82-month difference. And so perhaps you could expound on that again. But here's my question, and this is actually an important point, I think. And it's for both of you, which is if one of the intents or expected outcomes, desired outcomes of our probation, our postal probation is to reduce recidivism. In terms of what you know from the field, the factors that lead to recidivism, do those vary by region to region, or are those constant and consistent factors that exist from north to south, east to west in our state? Mr. Godfrey.
Mr. Chair, as to what are the drivers for criminality, there is a lot of research that has been done across the nation on that very question. And what they found is that typically it has to do at times based upon substance abuse, at times drives recidivism. It can be who they hang around with. It can be also their thoughts, as well as employment and education are all some of the factors that drive recidivism. So our goal, when we think about probation and the work that we do, is to start to really understand what are the drivers of the criminality. And for us, that is what we try to target for supervision. And if we're able then to target those areas, more likely we're able to reduce their likelihood of recidivism. So the field of corrections has evolved to a point where we have risk assessments and needs tools that are out there right now that help really, as we're working with the person, start to gauge where they're at and what are their potential drivers for behavior. And that's what we want to really focus in on and work with the person. And it's not to a point where we're talking to them. It's really we're working alongside with them around change. So there's a lot of research that really guides how we need to do our work to have an impact on recidivism.
Well, I take it, Mr. Godfrey, that those tools and those risk assessments and the evidence that underlie them are not, I guess I'm just putting it out there, are those heavily vary by virtue of geographic diversity, by region?
I wouldn't say there's any differences really based upon geographic areas for potential areas of need or what are the causes of criminality. So I think the things that I mentioned, Mr. Chair, are the things that I think that you would work on regardless if you're from the metro or greater Minnesota. And often the probation agents or persons that work with the person that's coming out of a facility go through the same exact training because it is universal and applied statewide, as well as those same principles are also very much across the entire nation as to what is guiding our work.
Well, thank you. Representative Chardine, you have a question. Members, the page is passing out the sheet that Ms. Mitchell referenced earlier, and perhaps you can jog our memory a little bit about what this is. But Chardine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not so sure which of the testifiers this would go to. But as I think about the longer probation terms that happen in the certain jurisdictions that are very different, is there been any studies or is there any evidence to show that those longer periods of probation result in a reduced amount of recidivism? You know, you talked about longer periods. Ultimately, you have more. Maybe it's just more because of the time. But can we quantify that, you know, the difference in the four-year period between some of the judicial districts, does that result in better public safety, less offenses, and all those other types of things? If you could speak to that a little bit.
Ms. Mitchell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, in Minnesota, no, we haven't done those studies. Right now, the Robina Institute is working on, we are working on recidivism, and we hope to have some numbers within the next month, but we don't have them now. And what we've seen in the literature is that the longer probation terms result in poorer outcomes. So the hypothesis regarding, you know, nobody knows exactly why, with regard to technical violations, the hypothesis is actually just because you're watching them longer and you're seeing behaviors, and often those are behaviors that are legal for anyone else to engage in. It's just not legal for that individual to engage in. So that's what it is with technicals. There is no, and actually most of the longer term outcomes, the longer you go, the more likely the failure is a technical reason, not recidivism. So that's what the literature shows.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would think there needs to be some type of study that looks at, are these offenses that are becoming, like you had mentioned, technical or things that may be legal for everybody else, but not for this person on probation, versus, you know, the other group that's getting off early that's, you know, same behavior, but that behavior doesn't have, you know, isn't a condition of probation, so it's not considered a technical violation. I mean, ultimately, what I'm always concerned about in this committee is what does it do to public safety? So if these individuals aren't committing crimes that you would consider outside of their probationary period as endangering the public, then I understand that the recidivism rate would be higher because of technical violations, but actually committing new crimes, I mean, it probably wouldn't have any impact. And I think it's important that as we think about things like this, that we're doing things that are concerned about public safety. And if we actually find out that, in the end, longer probation terms actually has a negative effect on public safety, it then also gives us another reason to say, why are we having people on probation for extended periods of time? That's more of a statement, I guess, than a question.
Members, I do have a couple questions. I think Representative Johnson wants to follow up on, I think, I'm guessing, on your question. But Representative Johnson and Representative Christensen, I'd like to have County Attorney Choi give his testimony, and I'd ask these two to stay close, and then we'll get to the questions from Representative Johnson and Representative Christensen. County Attorney Joy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Choi. I am the Ramsey County Attorney. Today I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. The issue of probation reform and improving the outcomes for people who are subject to probation, but also for the quality of justice and ensuring public safety in the state of Minnesota, this conversation is a really important one. And from the county attorney's perspective, we would like to see resolution from a policy perspective so that we could achieve some of the things that have been already stated about addressing some of the disparities and having more of a standardized, uniform way in which we go about thinking about probation. So from a county attorney perspective, a lot of my members, as we have been wrestling with this issue came to us about 2 years ago when Governor Mark Dayton convened a small work group and asked the stakeholders to be thinking about, is there a way that we should be shortening the lengths of probation? Should we address some of these disparities? And this conversation within the County Attorneys Association has been really an evolution because we had to think about some things very, very differently. I think naturally we would assume that maybe longer probation sentences leads to perhaps more public safety. We have a low incarceration rate in the state of Minnesota, and maybe the reason why is because we rely on probation. But there's also lots of literature that suggests that the effectiveness of probation starts to diminish at a certain point, about 3 to 5 years. And there's a lot of literature out there. There is more work that needs to happen with respect to studying some of these issues. In fact, in Ramsey County, we've engaged Robina to look at that very question about public safety. I think we actually have a natural laboratory here in the state of Minnesota. You've got Hennepin County and St. Louis County would be another, which are outliers in the context of their lengths of probation. A long time ago in Hennepin County, from the justice stakeholders, they embarked on a plan based upon their own evaluation and research to limit probation lengths to shorter amounts. And Ramsey County would be a county that would be in the middle, and then you've got many other counties in greater Minnesota that have longer sentences or, of probation. And so I think getting some of that information is really critical, and so I know that Robina is working on some of that. But that goes to the question of public safety. And so from our perspective, we want to be very thoughtful about ensuring that we have the public safety outcomes that we would want. We also want to make sure that we're not over-relying on probation. And so for the past 2 years, we have been engaged with many of the advocates, as well as our state public defender and the private defense bar, on some conversations about trying to come to an agreement that could work for the county attorneys and others in law enforcement, and also for what the advocacy community has been talking about trying to figure out a way to shorten these probation sentences if they're not necessary. Now, one thing that I want to say is, you know, just recently we had a criminal justice leader from Wisconsin come and speak to our annual meeting of Minnesota County Attorneys. And one of the things that he was talking about was that he was marveling at our low incarceration rate and wanting to have the Minnesota system where they might even rely more on probation, because in Wisconsin it's the inverse of ours. So I think these are really heavy issues that as a committee and as a legislature, all of you should be thinking about. The County Attorneys Association has been at the table, and we will work with Representative Wong to find a resolution this year so that we could have uniform guidelines throughout the state. Thank you.
Thank you, County Attorney Choi. We do have several questions, so I'd like the three of you to field those if you will. Representative Johnson and Representative Christensen.
Chair Mariani, I just wanted to thank Ms. Mitchell for providing this information, and County Attorney Choi for actually stating the true facts that Judicial District 4 and 6 are actually the outliers. The other 8 congressional districts are pretty much flat, very little difference amongst them. And I think part of the reason is that we have what's called a pre-sentence investigation where the probation officers fill it out and give the recommendations to the judges as to what the sentencing could be by the investigation, where the county attorney either agrees or argues for a stiffer sentence sometimes, or the defense requests a lower sentence, and the county attorneys, they talk about it and the judge has to make a decision. But usually it goes off what the PSI investigation has come up with.
I don't know if there's a question there, if anyone wishes to comment.
I think one thing, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think that's one of the things that county attorneys would point to, because every case is going to involve a specific set of circumstances and a specific background of the person who's accused of the crime and ultimately convicted of it, right? And to get to that notion of what justice should mean in that particular case, sometimes putting a one-size-fits-all type of parameter around it could actually lead to a result that may not be good, because you could have a county attorney who might then recommend that the person should go to prison instead of having a probationary time period. So I think that nuance is a really important one, how that might play out at the local level.
Ms. Mitchell, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, so I served as the president of the National Association of Sentencing Commissions for 3 years, and in that regard, I had the opportunity to work with commissions from other states. And one thing that I've learned is that sort of sentencing is a local phenomenon. It's we have a perception about what's right based on what we do in our town or in our city or in our judicial district. So I think that we're seeing not only are there differences across judicial district, because in Hennepin it's normal to have a 3-year probation term, and in another county in the state it might be normal to have more like a 7-year probationary term. But what we're also we also have a difference between what Minnesota considers normal and what other states consider normal. So if we looked across, Robina did a study, we looked at statutes for 21 different states, and we looked at what the maximum probation terms are in those other states, and 12 of those 21 states had the maximum term at 5 years or less. Washington had it at 1 year. So, you know, that's their normal, and it's very different than what we would consider normal. So some states obviously were right there with us. There were 3 states that had used the statutory maximum just like we do, and there were 2 states that didn't have any kind of a cap. There was no limit. It's just whatever the judge thought was appropriate. So I think that that's another thing to consider. Is this an opportunity, I guess, to consider what we think of as normal?
Representative
Johnson. Just the follow-up comment on that as well. Minnesota changed things back in the late 70s with the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, and we went to a much lower prison sentence. And so we have one of the lowest incarcerations in the state. But to make up the difference, to make sure, we made a longer probation period, because we have a lot of crimes. A person commit a felony and never spent one day in county jail, but they spend the whole time on paper. So it's a toss-up. Do we have more prison time and longer and shorter probation, or longer probation and shorter prison time? That's the justification back then when I was just getting into law enforcement. They were talking about way back then.
Well, Representative Long, I think you've got the sentencing guideline bill as well, and I know it's not before us, but I think it's important that we reflect on this, because it seems to me that through the sentencing guidelines, we had formal decision-making that provided guidance around direct impacting in terms of prison sentences. It seems to me what I'm hearing, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm learning as I'm going along here, that we don't have the equivalency of that kind of decision-making in a centralized way when it comes to probation. That probation has evolved, I think Representative Johnson, you're correct, but, you know, in terms of the reality of the ground, probation has evolved into this reality of a long, most of our counties, a long presence, existence for offenders, right? But that didn't come about, I don't think, as a result of some kind of centralized decision around probation. And I think it really begs the question for us as a state whether or not we want to have that evolution continue to be as it is, or whether we want to have a conversation and some decision-making that provides direction across the state. And so I think, Representative Johnson, as I understand, I think you do articulate how reality has evolved. I think it's probably a stretch to say that evolved because we all decided across the state that we're going to have these really long probation periods as determined, you know, through formal actions in a centralized way, similar to our sentencing guideline deliberations. Clearly, it's happened, you know, on a judge-by-judge, judicial district-by-judicial district area, so we've got lots of opinions, it seems to me, in our state. Representative Long.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd just point out to Representative Johnson, we certainly have a lot to be proud of, I think, in the space of incarceration in those terms.
I agree.
If you're looking at total time under supervision, as I mentioned, we're 13th. So when you're talking about the full spectrum of punishment, we're really not leading the way, I think, as a state. And while St. Louis County and Hennepin County may appear as outliers on this chart, if you compare them to a number of states, you know, they're the, I think, that type of probation length term would be much more consistent with what states like Alabama and Mississippi are doing. And we would be looking at the other judicial districts as far outliers from what other states are doing. I think it's also worth asking the question of what is the purpose, as a County Attorney Choi mentioned, of having lengths longer than 5 years. Is that actually going towards the purposes that we want it to, of public safety, and as Representative Dean mentioned? And we're seeing that most of the revocations, as I mentioned, are in the first 3 years. 99% are in the first 5 years. So what is the goal of having 5, 10, 15, 20, 40-year probation terms, and are we actually being counterproductive? I think that's the question before us.
Members, we do have three other testifiers. I want to make sure we get their voices in. I trust that you all can stick around as we continue to have this conversation. And I do have a list of other members who have questions. I will get back to you. But I do want to hear, we could bring them back. Absolutely, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll call up Jennifer Schroeder.
Good afternoon. It's good to see you again. We were together a couple hours ago with the group at the press conference.
Yeah, so for those of you I saw earlier, I'm just going to share a little bit more of my past that brought me to that spot and what is currently going on in my life. I was going to take up a little more time, but I think I'm going to speed it up a little bit.
Sounds perfect. And do start by giving us your name for the record.
Jennifer Schroeder.
Welcome, Ms. Schroeder.
And I just want to thank the committee for giving me this opportunity also to be able to share with you a little bit about myself. I come from a family of addicts. I myself was raised in an addictive environment. I became an addict. We are all products of our environment, I feel like, and at some point, that gets a little bit, I just don't know. So I'm just going to skip all this because we've been in here for quite some time. I can give you a million justifications and excuses for what led up to that day. My newborn baby was taken from me from the hospital, was my rock bottom of my addiction. A month later, I was arrested for possession of 21 grams of methamphetamines. I was driving a car and I got pulled over for a driving violation. I, at the time, was fighting a CHIPS case, so I was sober for a month, ironically. But I was still selling drugs because that was what I knew. That is what I had done, and I take full responsibility for that and the damage that I did to my community, and I made the community I lived in a little bit less safe because of my actions. At what point, though, have I paid for that crime? I am currently serving a 40-year probation sentence, and I did 365 days in a county jail. I have 98 months of time hanging over my head, so I am in constant fear of being thrown back into prison. Since my release from jail, I have gone to college. I have graduated college. with a 4.0, I might add. I am an alcohol and drug counselor currently. The obstacles that I face every day because of my probation sentence are numerous. I was disqualified from working with vulnerable adults because of my probation sentence, so I had to go through a fairly lengthy set-aside process, which I will have to do as many times as I apply for jobs in the future. Every employer will know my past. Every employer will know all the details of everything because that is what is given to them when I have to do these set-asides. I cannot vote until I am 71 years old. That means that I'm silenced. As a tax-paying citizen, I am silenced. My daughter was ultimately, my rights were terminated. I never got custody back. Thank God I have a great relationship with her and the family who adopted her. But some people aren't so fortunate to have the chips fall the way that they fell for me. I was lucky enough to have some very supportive volunteers in the jail. I had a very awesome church community who helped me through the hardest trial I ever had in my life, fighting for my daughter. The judge had told me that I could decide between fight for a downward departure or go to prison. And hindsight 2020, I would have taken the prison time had I known I was going to lose custody of my daughter anyway. I took the downward departure because my year timeline for my daughter would have ran out in prison. So I decided to serve the 365 days in jail to get that extension and get her back. And ultimately, she ended up terminating them anyway as soon as that year came up. My visits were tapered. I was given 3 for 2 weeks, 2 for 2 weeks, 1 for 1 week, as to not traumatize her, who at that point still called me mom. So that has been, the judge that was running the cases ran my concurrent with my criminal case and my CHIPS case. She was the judge presiding over both cases. A cap on probation could prevent a judge from having a bad day and handing down a sentence to somebody that she may not have on a day that she was having a good day. Since then, I have been in this judge's chambers. We have shook hands. I've shook hands with the county attorney who ultimately wanted me to go to prison. I have been back to this county to speak. My probation officer wants me off of probation. My probation officer was at my graduation, but they can't release me because Wright County has, you serve 3 years of 5, period, and you will not be considered for release until that is. So effectively, I will not be even eligible for parole until, 28 years, I'm saying, or something like that. So that is embarrassing, to say the least, to have to go into the profession that I'm in and be looked at as a professional with a 40-year probation sentence on paper. Any of my clients that I work with, if they really wanted to, could look me up on the BBC and see I am serving a 40-year probation sentence. It's kind of hard for them to take me seriously as a helper when I'm doing more probation than they are. I can't cross state lines. I can't go into the jails and do assessments for my job. I can't do several things. I would say the most damaging thing, though, is the shame and embarrassment that comes with it and the fear that is in you all the time of having to go back to prison. Because 98 months is still on my over my head all the time. Even though I have succeeded in every area of my life, I am a tax-paying citizen, I volunteer, I am an active member of my church. I come to things like this and advocate for people who are not as fortunate to have a voice. And I just really think that there needs to be some reform in all areas of this.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. And congratulations to you and your personal journey of getting it right.
Thank you.
For yourself and doing that in a manner where you're giving back to our society as well.
Thank you.
Representative Long, I do want to hear from the other two very quickly, and then we'll get back to the question. Ms. Schroeder, hopefully you can stick around in case there might be some questions.
Okay.
Representative Long.
My last two testifiers are Mitch Christensen with the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections at Counties and Jason Flores with American for Prosperity.
Very well. Gentlemen, please come forward. Oh, two people, not gentlemen. I'm sorry. Was the first one Mitch?
Midge.
Midge.
Yes.
I apologize, Midge. I heard Mitch.
And that's fine.
Made an assumption. Then I saw you and thought, oh, I got that wrong. Welcome
Thank
to
you.
The committee.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. My name is Midge Christensen. I'm the Community Corrections Act Director for Chippewa, Lac La Parole, Swift, and Yellow Medicine Counties.
Welcome.
I'm also the MACAC Legislative Chair. I think most of you are familiar with MACAC. We're the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act Counties. We represent the 34 counties that are organized under the Community Corrections Act. Even though we're only 34 of the counties, we do supervise a little over 70% of all the offenders that are under supervision in Minnesota. We're here today, and I'm here on behalf of my colleagues to support this bill. We supervise over 70% of the offenders. We represent counties all around the state, from the far northern region to the far southern region and everywhere in between. We have very small counties, Rock, Nobles, my counties, for example, to the large metro, Hennepin, Ramsey, Anoka, Dakota. So in that capacity, we've observed firsthand the striking disparity in the probation links around the state. We transfer cases back and forth. We deal with our own supervision. We deal with interstate, the same as the Department of Corrections, and we see the disparity and the impact that that has. We've also watched as Minnesota has grown to an entity or a state that has one of the highest rates of individuals that are under supervision or correctional control. And we, firsthand in the field, have dealt with the ramifications of that as far as resources and our ability to deliver effective interventions to the folks that we work with. But finally, we've also witnessed the negative repercussions that can impact individuals when those probationary periods are unduly long. In our line as frontline practitioners, we're deeply committed, as Mr. Godfrey said, to public safety and reducing recidivism. And we do know what works to protect public safety and reduce recidivism. And it's working with offenders one-to-one and individuals to decrease and deal with their criminal thinking. And that takes time. It takes the probation agent having time to deliver those individual cognitive interventions. It takes probation agent time to assist those offenders out in the community to get their lives back on track. We know also that the research tells us that the most key time to do that is within that first three-year period, roughly, potentially five. There are certainly some cases where public safety is needed to protect victim safety, to get restitution paid, et cetera, but there are provisions in the bill that allow for those. Violations are going to occur, again, as been cited before, during that initial period. Past that time, if there was research that said we are well spending our resource on 5, 10, 15-year probationary links because it protects public safety, then there would be benefit in doing that. But the research does not tell us that. And in fact, you talked about some of the statistics from Rubina and sentencing guidelines, and also the Department of Corrections collects recidivism rates, felony recidivism rates for felony offenders. And so what we see in the state is that the jurisdictions and those judicial districts that have longer periods of supervision do not necessarily have lower recidivism rates. And conversely, the judicial districts around the state that have lower pronounced periods of probation don't necessarily have higher recidivism rates. And so if we look both in Minnesota and nationally, it seems to me that we know what the target time period is, we know what the target behaviors are, and it only makes sense for Minnesota to follow what the research tells us and not spend our resources on these lengthy periods of probation. There's no magic bullet with probation. Simply putting somebody on probation does not prevent recidivism. What happens with probation is what you do when you have those individuals before you and how you are able to work with them in the most important time frame, not simply stacking them up on probation caseloads so that you can track them down at the end and find them doing something wrong. That's my brief little snippet. MACAC does support the bill before you. We support what's best for Minnesota with regard to public safety and individuals getting their lives back on track.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Christensen. I was struck by, I was not aware of this, the the studies that the data that tells us that longer, those regions with longer probation periods are not necessarily the same districts that have lower recidivism.
Not necessarily. There seems to be no correlation or remarkably little difference in recidivism based on those probationary terms.
And it would seem to me that Ms. Schroeder's testimony personalizes that reality. I'm getting everything mixed up here. Mr. Flores, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to say a few words today. I did send a letter to all of you prior to the committee hearing today. I hope you got that. It's much more detail there. But I do want to highlight a couple of points about why we are supporting the concepts that are included in this bill today. Simply put, this bill is an important first step toward reforming our criminal justice system to protect people and preserve public safety. It removes barriers to opportunity for people who have criminal records, and it gives individuals a reliable pathway back to success, regardless of their history. There's no question from some of the testimony that we've heard today that our current criminal justice system, that status quo, is failing in many regards. We've heard the testimony of the detail of across county, and your zip code shouldn't matter when this kind of sentencing and the probation length comes into effect. We believe our goal should be helping those who have been incarcerated to succeed if they want to, and if they are doing the work, and if that is their goal, that we can't continue to put up administrative hurdles that get in their way. That's part of the work that we did nationally in Congress with the bipartisan First Step bill, which focused on federal prison sentencing reform. We really see some of this probation reform here in Minnesota as an outgrowth of those same concepts. Bottom line, we want to get smarter on crime where we can with common sense reforms like this, while staying tough on crime where we need it the most, and making sure that our resources and those scarce taxpayer dollars are spent in the areas and on the people who are highest risk and deserve and need that spend the most. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that sums up our support for this bill, and we encourage its passage and continue to move through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flores, and I appreciate the message and reality of bipartisan work that led to the First Step effort at the federal level and the efforts across the country to create bipartisan efforts at the state level. I'm struck that among many supporters, your organization is supported by the Koch brothers, not folks that I would identify with my political persuasion, but certainly where there's some powerful, important intersectional interest in common good public safety. So thank you for your testimony today. Representative Long, is that it for your testimony?
It is. Thank you.
Very well. We do have five members. So members, we've got about 10 minutes. So let's do this. Let's make our questions as short as possible. So we'll respect each one of our fellow members to get their questions in. And if the testifiers could be hovering nearby so that we can maximize the time, that'd be terrific. Representative Christensen, followed by Representative Nash and then Representative Grasso. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you to the panel, to all of you, wherever you are. I do have a question about resources. We talked a little bit in the end here about resources. Are there cost figures? You know, what are we spending per offender per year? I mean, are there averages? I'm just wondering about the money involved in this whole situation, because I can't imagine the cost of a 40-year probation period, what it's costing taxpayers. So I'm wondering if there are any facts and figures about that. Thank you.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Christensen. I did not request a fiscal note at this point because the bill is still being negotiated, but I can only imagine that the bill will wind up saving money and not costing money, because at the end of the day, we are, as you point out, using resources, as many of our testifiers pointed out, not very effectively.
I pay $600 a year to be on probation.
If there's again, if there are anyone who's testified, they could be nearby for these questions, up at the witness stand, that would be tremendously helpful. Representative Christensen, quick follow-up.
I guess I'm just wondering what the cost. I can't imagine the cost that we've already paid for some of the offenders that have been, for example, and you pay to be on probation. Oh, yeah. So, you know, I'm just curious about the dollar figures around all of this. Either way, I imagine we would save money if we had, fairness in sentencing. So thank you.
Well, like Kristen said, we certainly will be looking at dollar amounts, at least on the bills, but I think that's valuable, important information for us to have on a per-person basis as well. And so I'd ask Representative Long to find a way to get us that information as well. Representative Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Russell. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for the author and then for County Attorney Choi. Okay, if we get somebody from the county attorney. As the rep for the County Attorney Association is coming forward, Representative Long, question. In the recommendation that the county attorneys made, actually it's a second paragraph, starts with that they believe that the Minnesota legislature should order a comprehensive study by an entity such as the legislative auditor. And you're going to meet the legislative auditor and find that he's extremely effective at what he does. I'm just wondering if we have not talked about that, if we have not done that, why? Because it's clearly a recommendation made by the County Attorney Association to address this very issue, and yet we're doing a bill to sort of circumvent or jumpstart that. Not sure what your intent was, but would like to hear from you and then also from the county attorneys.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I certainly would be interested in having additional information. I think that one of the bills that we're hearing later this week will be asking for more research from the Sentencing Guidelines Commission on probation. But I think that we have, given the work that the Governor's Task Force pulled together in 2017, some of the research from the Rubina Institute, I think we have enough information right now to know that we have a problem and to be able to move forward. But certainly more information is always better.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and again to the author. That's all well and good, but was the legislative auditor part of that commission?
Representative Long.
Legislative auditor is not in a proposal I'm bringing forward at this point.
Very good. And if we could hear from the county attorneys then as well.
Judge Small.
Mr. Chair, Representative, when that was written, since that time we've had extensive conversations with other stakeholders, and have been the beneficiary of a lot more information than we had at that time. And so we agree here with Representative Long, and I think we do have much more information than we had at the time we wrote that.
Very well. Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Representative Long. Looking at the bill, is there anything in the bill that will allow for the courts to extend probation as needed for those who are showing that they're not amenable to probation?
Representative Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grossel, the bill currently would cap probation at 5 years. There is the ability for an extension of 1 year, as was mentioned earlier.
Representative Long, I think we heard earlier from our counsel here.
Right. So I'm repeating what
okay,
counsel said.
Okay, very well. I just want to make sure.
The short answer is the cap is 5 years with one exception for a one-year extension.
One-year extension for someone.
Representative Grossel.
Okay.
I guess that was more than one exception. Is that correct, Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members, very briefly, there can be an exception for failure to pay restitution. That's a one-year exception, but it can be imposed two times, up to a maximum of 2 years. There's also a one-year exception for failure to complete court-ordered treatment. That's a completely separate exception, and that is limited to a one-year exception.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
And I'll just add, that's under current law, so that's not being changed, those two extension abilities. What is being changed is moving the maximum from the maximum period being the certain sentence of imprisonment to 5 years.
Okay, so is there, I guess, Mr.
Representative Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I've heard those two things, but is there something in there to extend if this person is showing that they are not adjusting back into society.
Representative Long.
No, there's not. If they made it to the end of the, I suppose within that five-year period, they could be revoked at any time. But if they were not revoked in that five-year period and they got to the end, and then that would be the end of it under the current language.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wells.
Reason I bring that up, thank you, Mr. Chair. Reason I bring that up is because there have been several cases of people who have received stays who have gone their 5 years. They've gone into chameleon mode. They've blended in until after that time, and they've struck again. They've injured more people. They've hurt more people, less than more kids. So, I mean, I guess that would be something I would ask the author to take into consideration, that you might want to look at that.
So long, it sounds like an ongoing conversation. We are going to lay this bill over, and we'll continue to work on it. But I think you have a comment.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to note that I'm not sure which crimes you're referring to. Two crimes that are excluded from this entirely are murder and criminal sexual conduct, for all categories of criminal sexual conduct.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Grossel. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just was looking at the effective date, and I was wondering if someone like Ms. Schroeder, and I really appreciated your story, would be able to benefit from this, because the way I read the effective date, it indicates to me that she maybe wouldn't be able to.
Representative Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, that is a very good point and something I'm hoping that we can address when we bring the bill back up before committee. I think that Ms. Schroeder's story perfectly highlights the need for making sure that people have a better access to reducing probation terms. And as the state public defender mentioned, the current systems are not adequate to allow folks the chance to go before a court and petition for that. So that's something I'm hoping we can address as we move forward.
Thank you.
Members, we are at the time of our adjournment. I do have two other members that have questions, Representative Lucero and Representative Johnson, but what I'm wondering is if your questions are for any of the testifiers, because Representative Long is on our committee and this bill will be back up and we'll continue the conversation. And I do want to maximize the presence of these folks. So if your questions are to them particularly, we'll go over a couple of minutes to get that in. Representative Lucero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a real quick question and comment. So my question is indeed to Ms. Schroeder. During the program of your addiction that you were speaking about, did you go through any program at all?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm curious to know which one it was.
So I can tell you they had me in treatment in jail, 365 days. You know, they had it was a pilot program for a treat, and it failed miserably. I got out, I went to Wayside Family Treatment. I was there for 6 months. For reunification purposes, the judge sent me there, because you can have your kids there. Graduated there, and then I went to a sober house where I lived for 5 years, and I ended up being the manager while I went to school and graduated, and have since moved out recently and got a job. I mean, like I said, the chips fell in a place, in a way for me and if I was black, it probably wouldn't have happened that way. I'm just gonna, you know, if the situation had been any different in any any one way, it could have failed miserably. But that would have sent me back to prison for 10 years, a mistake, you know. I'm smart enough to have advocated for myself and done things, and I had a drive under me after my daughter was taken, so I had a lot of, force behind my recovery.
Sorry, have a quick comment.
Yeah, just a quick comment, Mr. Chair, thank you. And so you had mentioned earlier that you're from Wright County, and my colleague here, Representative O'Neill, and there's...
Okay.
So I was just very warmed by your testimony there. We have a creator that delights in us taking control of our life and to fix our life and to pick ourselves up. So it's, again, my heart was smiling to hear your testimony that you've taken control of your life to get back on track to, and then now that you've channeled that into helping others that are in a similar situation to you that you were by using your experience. So just very encouraging. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good old Representative Lucero. Thank you. So Justice, just a question for the testifier.
Just a couple quick comments. First of all, the one testifier said he sent a letter. I do not recall receiving. I
Let's make sure we get that letter. Who was the testifier?
It's Mr. Flores.
Okay, Mr. Flores.
Make sure everybody on the committee gets it, and along with our research. And the other thing, I wish that a lot of things on this bill affect the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. I wish they would have either Executive Director Reitz or the Chair, Christopher Dietzen, would have been invited to be here as well. The questions I have.
They are here, and I will make sure at upcoming hearing that you will get to ask them questions, Representative Johnson. Members, I quickly want to acknowledge the presence of correction officers from Faribault. They're ASU members. They sat through this entire hearing. We thank you for your work, and we're encouraged by your presence. That, Representative Long, the chair lays over House File 689 as amended for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I want to thank you. I want to thank all our testifiers. And until tomorrow, this committee stands adjourned.